There you go. Now you know. Okay. What I want to take a look at together is something that we really haven't looked at in years, but picking up on the last week's theme that we want to take a look at, an introduction to the mitzvah of shofar. Last week we learned, we looked at the notion of zichron truah and what it commemorates. We played with that a little bit. Today I want to go to something more basic. You look in the Torah and you know that the Torah describes Rosh Hashanah as Yom Truah, a day of Truah. I don't even know what Truah means, but we'll see that it has a few possible meanings, at least two. And from that, we get to a shofar and we get to 30 sounds. Now, I'm not going to go to 100 sounds. That's a later minhag, but 30 sounds is the clear halacha d'Rabbanan. And that's, by the way, what we do, for instance, when somebody is ill and has to be home, or we go to the hospital to visit, we do 30 sounds. That's the kind of the minimum. So how do we get from Truah to 30 sounds? And what we're going to be spending this next half hour doing is really looking at Midrash Halacha. Midrash Halacha, specifically out of the school of Rabbi Akiva and the Sifra, but we'll see how it plays. So if you see here on the page of Source 1 and 2, are the only two mentions of Rosh Hashanah anywhere in Chumash, not in Tanakh, in Chumash. And by the way, it's never called Rosh Hashanah. There's only one day in all of Tanakh that's ever called Rosh Hashanah. And can you guess what it is? Because it's not Rosh Hashanah.
Tu Bishvat.
So Tu Bishvat, not in the Torah, not in Tanakh. So if you open up to Yechezkel Perak Mem, Pasuk Aleph, the beginning of chapter 40 in Yechezkel, says that God spoke to Yechezkel Barosh Hashanah on Yom HaKippurim. In other words, Yom Kippur is called Rosh Hashanah, which is nice and confusing. But what it means is that, and by the way, in the Torah itself, in Sefer Shemot, Sukkot is called the end of the year. But you think about it, a year is a circle. We just continue to go in a circle. And a circle doesn't have a well-defined end or beginning. Whatever point you want to say is the beginning, that's your beginning. Like running laps of the track, wherever you started, that's your lap. So whatever point, whenever you lap a run, when you finish a run, the only time around, you're both at the end and at the beginning. You're at the end of the previous run. So if let's say that you picture on the track, like I know I came to the track somewhere within these 30 yards. So when you get to those 30 yards, you finish the lap. But on the other end, when you get to the 30 yards, you may already be starting the next lap. And that's what this month seems to be. The month we'll call Tishrei seems to be the beginning of the year, but also the end of the year. And so Rosh Hashanah is really a season more than a day. But this day that we celebrate on the first of Tishrei, which, by the way, is the seventh month, so it's kind of hard to call it Rosh Hashanah, is mentioned twice in the Torah, and here are the two mentions. Bachodesh, and I highlighted certain words. We didn't highlight these last week because it's a different focus. I highlighted certain words because they're going to inform what we're doing. The Torah says, Dabar b'nei Yisrael, I'm reading from source one, Lemor Bachodesh Hashvi'i, in the seventh month, Bachad Bachodesh, on the first day, Yelachem Shabbaton, you have a day off, a day of ceasing work, Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh. And last week we talked about what Zichron Truah might mean. And in Bamidbar, in the only other full presentation of the calendar, which is in Pinchas, says Uba, and this is the Maftar we're going to read a week from Tuesday and Wednesday. Uba Chodesh Hashvi'i Be'achad LaChodesh Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. Again, Bachodesh Hashvi'i Be'achad LaChodesh Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Ta'asu. You don't do any work. Okay, again, like Shabbaton. Yom Truah Yelachem. And again, last week we looked at Yom Truah versus Zichron Truah. Fine. So based on these two psukim, what do I know I'm supposed to avoid on that day? What do I know I'm supposed to avoid on that day?
Malacha.
Malacha, doing work, certain kinds of work. What do I know I'm supposed to do from here on that day?
Truah.
A truah. What's a truah? I don't know. Now, you may start with the assumption that a truah, by definition, is a blast of a shofar. Not so quick. Let me show you two other things. I'm going to switch the share here now to my here. Sorry. And I will show you here a different kind of a truah. First of all, what instruments are mentioned in the Torah that we're obligated to have to use at any time?
Pitchers.
So we have the chatzotzrot, the cornets or the trumpets, which are going to show up here right away in a second. No pictures, but text, sorry. There we go. And boom. Let me just show it to you. Sorry. Going a little slow, but the chatzotzrot are commanded in Sefer Bamidbar. Moshe is supposed to make chatzotzrot, and they're supposed to be made out of pure silver. They're not natural, like in the sense of animal parts. They're metal. And here's what we're told about the chatzotzrot. Here we go. Good. Okay. Oops. Not good. Okay. Let's do this again. All right. Here we are. Sorry for the delay. And there we go. Asel chashtei chatzotzrot kesef. I'll put it up in English a little bit, make it a little easier. You're going to make two cornets or trumpets. All right. And now what do you do? So v'taku bahen, pasuk gimel, they should do a tkiah. Now, we're told that one tkiah of one chatzotzra, tkiah of both of them, means different things. And now look at pasukei. Utkatem truah, which means the word truah is something that could be done by a chatzotzra also. Right? Okay. And by the way, the truah there is used for, we saw it last week, for war and for moving. Okay, but I'm going to show you something else here. Take a look in Sefer Yehoshua. In Sefer Yehoshua, which is the story of the conquest of Jericho, chapter 6, we're told that the Kohanim are going to surround the city with seven shofarot, and on the seventh day, they're going to blow a tkiah. And when they blow the tkiah, what are the people supposed to do? What are those people supposed to do?
You're supposed to shout?
Yeah, you shout. What's the word in Hebrew?
Yariu.
Yariu. Truah. So the word truah could be a blast with any instrument. It can even be a blast with your own voice. So back to our first original question, how do I know what a truah is here? Right? So before getting to an answer, I'm going to find that there is yet an associated mitzvah in Vayikra, not far from our passage in Vayikra, that's going to help me out. And it's source 3. And believe it or not, source 3, which is not about Rosh Hashanah, is going to be the model that's going to help us with everything else. Source 3 is talking about Yovel. How often does Yovel happen?
50.
Once in a Yovel, right? Happens every 50 years, but it hasn't happened for over 2,000 years. Has all sorts of prerequisites that we haven't met in a long time, perhaps soon. Bahavartash shofar truah b'chodesh hashvi'i be'asor l'chodesh b'yom ha'kippurim taviru shofar b'chol ha'etzachem. Now, I want you to look at source 1 and 2, and you'll see that the words b'chodesh hashvi'i are highlighted, and they are in no means superfluous or superfluous or redundant or unnecessary. I'm being redundant and superfluous, but hopefully not unnecessary. But they are needed in the text because they're telling me what date, the first date of the seventh month. I need that. I don't know when it is. But in this pasuk, b'chodesh hashvi'i is a little bit problematic because take a look what it says. Ha'avartash shofar, you are going to make a sound with a shofar, and the sound is a truah. Okay, so now I know that on Yovel I'm supposed to use a shofar. B'chodesh hashvi'i be'asor l'chodesh, on the seventh month, on the tenth day. By the way, what's the tenth day of the seventh month?
Yom Kippur.
B'yom ha'kippurim. I got a problem. Because I start with a premise of absolute economy of language in the Torah's legal texts. It's not true about everything else in Torah, not about prophecy, not about narrative, but legal texts are supremely economic, which means no extra words. And here the Torah says, in the seventh month on the tenth day, on Yom Kippur, that's overkill. And the Midrash is very sensitive to this. And so now take a look at the pasuk, and I've highlighted it three different ways. Green highlighting red, yellow highlighting purple, just to keep a kind of color scheme here. All right? So these are the three texts that we're going to play with. Now, we're now going to look at the Midrash Tanaim. The Midrash Tanaim here is from the book called Sifra. And Sifra is the Midrash Tanaim on the book of Vayikra. It's also known by another name, which is Torat Kohanim, which if you think about it, is just a Hebrew way of saying Leviticus. Right? The book of the Kohanim. Instructions for the Kohanim. But the Sifra, which is the product of the school of Rabbi Akiva, and so it has Rabbi Akiva's stamp on the style of Midrash, goes through Vayikra and interprets, and using all of the various hermeneutic rules that Rabbi Akiva's school uses, understands, expands, intuits, etc., the law. Let's take a look at it. Now we have basically five paragraphs here. Paragraph, the first paragraph, which is paragraph Vav in this section, Uminayin Shehu B'Shofar. That's the first question I ask. Who says that you have to use a shofar? The Torah just says on Rosh Hashanah Yom Teruah, which means I can get up on the street corner or in my own room and go, ah, and I've done it. That's a teruah. If a wall falls down, all the better. I don't want to do it in my house. But how do I know I'm supposed to use a shofar? Talmud Lomar v'havarta shofar teruah b'chodesh ha'sri'i v'yasol ha'chodesh b'yom ha'kippurim. The answer is from this pasuk of Yovel. How does Yovel tell me it's not Rosh Hashanah? The answer is as follows. She'ein Talmud Lomar b'chodesh ha'sri'i. Meaning, the yellow highlighted piece, b'chodesh ha'sri'i, serves no purpose. It doesn't tell me anything, because I've already told you, Yom Kippurim. Uma Talmud Lomar b'chodesh ha'sri'i. So why does the Torah nonetheless say b'chodesh ha'sri'i? Harei truat shvi'it kazu. To tell me that the blasting on the seventh month is like this one. In other words, it's like a flag saying, every time you see b'chodesh ha'sri'i and you're told to make a noise, do it this way. Right? Ma'zu b'shofar of Trot Rosh Hashanah b'shofar. So just like the Yovel is explicitly with a shofar, so Rosh Hashanah is with a shofar. So we've gone step one. I want to make sure you're all with me before we go to step two. So step one, we went from the vague word truah, which is multivocal, sorry for the pun, and could be screaming, could be done with a different instrument, could be done with a shofar, to tell me it's done with the shofar because it has to be like Yovel. And Yovel is done with a shofar. By the way, what does the word Yovel actually mean? Yovel is actually means a ram. Right? Shnat Yovel is like the Chinese, or the year of the ram. Why is it the year of the ram? Because it's a year that is heralded by the blasting of the ram's horn. So just to say something about Yovel. The word Yovel, though, in Chumash then becomes this big celebration. So as a result of it, you get the Latin word jubilare, which means to celebrate, from which you get the English word jubilee. All right, it all comes from Yovel, and it actually comes back into modern Hebrew, and in modern Hebrew, a celebratory anniversary. But it starts as ram. It's a little fun with language. Okay, so the first thing that we got is that it's a shofar. But so far, all we know is that I'm supposed to get up with a shofar and make a sound, a truah. Now, we happen to know that a truah is some sort of a staccato sound. We don't know what it is, but we know it's a staccato sound because it's a war sound. We're told in the Chatzitzrot to use it when we go to war. All right? Uminayin shehi pshuta lefaneha. Now, the word pashut, what does the word pashut mean?
Pashut.
Simple. Straight. So pashut means a straight sound. A not trua, a straight flat sound. We call that a tkiah. Minayin sheep shutala for now. How do I know that I have to blow a tkiah before the trua? Talmud lomar vavarta shofar trua. Look at the green in pasuk 3. Leha'avir, which means to pass. But in the context of a sound, and we have it elsewhere in Shmot, it means to make a loud sound. So make a loud sound with the shofar, then truah. You see the three words, vavarta, shofar, truah. So vavarta alludes to a flat sound, a heralding sound, an announcing sound, and then the truah, which is the broken sound. Uminayin sheep shutala achareya. How do I know I have to have a flat sound after the trua? Look at the pasuk. Vavata shofar trua v'chodesh hashvi datara taviru shofar. All right, so therefore, tamulamar, taviru shofar. Now, ainli ela biyovel. So far, I only know that this is true on yovel, that I have to have a tkia, a true and a tkia. Right? And by the way, so far, I've only gotten three sounds, not 30. Barosh Hashanah Minayin, how do I know to expand it to Rosh Hashanah? The answer is exactly what we just said. There's no need for Bachodesh HaShvi'i in this pasuk. Again, it's extra. Any blasting in the seventh month is like this one. This is the model. Just like Yovel has a flat sound first and a flat sound last and in the middle of the Truah. Aftruat Rosh Hashanah, Pshutala Fanao, Pshutala Achareah. So Rosh Hashanah, same thing. So by the way, I've now got two steps. First step is I have to use a shofar. Second step is that I have to have a flat sound and a flat sound that sandwich a broken sound. Okay. Are we all together on that so far? We're good? Okay. Next step. Minayin shalosh shel shalosh shalosh. I know that I have to have three sounds, but who says I have to do it three times? By the way, what do we do on Rosh Hashanah? We do tkia, trua, tkia, three times. Isn't that what we do? Tkia, trua, tkia? Robert, you're about tkia, right? Is that what you do, tkia, trua, tkia? Is that all we do?
Well, we do different versions of trua.
Ah, there we go, exactly. So let's think we're going to get to that. But right now, we're going to go from 3 to 9. Three we got. Three we're all on board with. So how do I know that I do each one of those three times? Look at source 1, 2, and 3. What's the word in red text with green highlight? Trua, trua, trua. Now, remember what we've already done. Because of Bachodesh HaShvi'i, we've drawn these three together. Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, and Yovel. And now they become a group. And so now this group is made up of three truot. And so we have to do trua three times. But we have to do trua three times, and each trua always has to be preceded and followed by a tkia. Right? So here we go.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Where do you have that when something is mentioned multiple times that it becomes a creative as opposed to just more detail?
There are several other examples of it, but you're right. It is not a hard and fast rule, which is going to lead to our observation about this midrash when we finish it. I'll come back to it, but let me give you an example right now.
Okay.
Gemara in the fourth parak of Shabbat poses the question, how do we know that there's 39 malachot on Shabbat? After all, the Torah just says, do tasai ko malacha. How do we know that there's 39 categories of malacha? And by the way, 39 categories of malacha seems to be a very old tradition. Right? We talk about lamatet malachot. So one answer in the Bavli, and same answer given in Yerushalmi in another context, is Eila HaDvarim. The beginning of Vayakel, the gematria of Eila is 36, and Dvarim is another 2, and HaDvarim adds another one, 39. Okay. But another whole direction taken in the Midrash is if you count how many times it says Malacha in the Torah, it's 39. Now, that's a difficult, and by the way, that leads to problems of certain malachot don't mean malacha. The story with Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar, whether it's malacha or not, it's an interesting problem. Bottom line, though, and that'll take me to the other point is, bottom line, how do we know that there's 39 malachot? Up against the wall. Jeopardy. Final Jeopardy. This is it. Right? And you put all your money, bet all your money on it. And Jeopardy answer is, this is how we know, I'm doing this in memory of Alex Trebek, all of how do we know that this is how we know that there's 39 melachot? What would your answer be? And the judges are Tamei Chachamim, they know what they're doing. What would your answer, what would your Jeopardy question be? What is? Go ahead. This is how we know there's 39 melachot. The Jeopardy question is, what is?
Categories of work.
I didn't say what they are. How do we know there's 39 of them?
Someone said so.
Yeah, good. What's a one word in Hebrew for that? Or if you want to be Tevye, you could sing it. Mesora. We have a Mesora of 39, right? We have a Mesora of 39. We have a transmitted tradition of 39 Avot Melachot. Once we have, and that's what I'm getting here, once we have the 39 Melachot as a tradition, then we try to link it through the text and Gematria and how many times it shows up. I'll tell you why I'm saying that, Jason, because when you take a look at this Midrash, you have to ask the same question Jason asked. Well, since when do we start counting up times it shows up and turning that into details of the mitzvah? So I want you to look at the very beginning of the Midrash here, the first of our section. U'minayin shehu b'shofar. What does that mean? How do I know that this shua is done with the shofar? What's the nature of that question? Is that question a truly interrogative, open-ended question with all sorts of possible answers? Or is it a question that rests on an assumption? Look at the language. What do you think?
Say this one more time.
This is an open-ended question with all possible answers out there. Or is it a question that rests on an assumption? Look at the language. U'minayin shehu b'shofar. How do I know that I have to use a shofar? What does that mean?
It assumes we're using a shofar.
It means that we assume we're using a shofar. And now, where do I get it from? In other words, I'm not saying, I don't know what to use. Let me look in the Torah. Let me use midrashic tools and figure out what to use. My voice, a trumpet, a shofar, a sousaphone. I don't know. Or is it saying, I know I use a shofar. How do I know you use a shofar? Because my father used a shofar. How did he? Because his father, because Moshe Rabbeinu used a shofar. We all know to use a shofar. And now we're saying, good, let's see if we can find it in the text. So the same thing, Jason, would be for here. I know that I blow three truot, each preceded and followed by a tkia. Now, where do I find that in the text? Okay? Does that make it smoother for you?
And this is basically the Talmud.
So this is Midrash Halacha. Now, Midrash Halacha, I'm going to use Menachem Elon Zal's terminology. If you know Menachem Elon, he was a justice on the Israeli Supreme Court, and he wrote a fabulous book called Mishpat Ivri, which is both part of his argument in favor of adopting Choshen Mishpat as the rule of the land, and the civil law of Halacha for Israel. But also, it is a fabulous, it's been translated in English, it's a fabulous introduction to the halachic system. And he talks about Midrash Halacha, and he identifies Midrash Halacha as either being Midrash Hayotzer, the Midrash that creates the Halacha, meaning I come to the Pesukim, I don't know what to do, I use the Midrash to get there. Some Midrashim seem to be that. And others, known as Midrash HaMiva'er or Midrash HaMisayeya, he uses the word Miva'er, a Midrash that clarifies or that supports pre-existent Halacha. And that's what this looks like. And if we know the Halacha, now let's find the Midrashic connection. Okay. So the three different times gives me three truot, and each one, of course, is three, because tkiya, truot, tkiya, good. And then, u'minayin l'intena tamur b'yovel rosh hashanah, tamur rosh hashanah b'yovel. Now the question is, why am I mixing the one mention of Yovel and two mentions of Rosh Hashanah and turning them into three? And by the way, the same as rules for Yovel. Yovel also has three, because Rosh Hashanah, two plus Yovel. In other words, all of them are the same. The answer is, b'chodesh hashvi'i, b'chodesh hashvi'i, l'gzerah shavah. Again, the word Bachodesh Hashvi shows up in all three places. It ties them together and turns them into a single unit. So now, Ketzad Seder Tkiot, the Mishnah, the Midrash then concludes. So what do you do? Tokea Umeria V'Tokea, Tokea Umeria V'Tokea, Shalosh Tkiot Shem Teisha. So that's what you do. Tkiot Truot Tkiot. Nine, three times, that's nine. And then the Midrash says, Shi'ur Tkiot Kidei Truot. Robert knows this very well. How long is your Tkiot? How long do you have to do? The same length as the truah.
Right.
What's the rule? All right. There we go.
So which came first?
What?
According to your first pasuk at the top, you have the flat note first and then the truah.
Uh-huh. Correct.
How do you know which is the baseline for the measurement?
Because what is it all revolving around? It's all revolving around truah. Truah is the focal point.
Okay.
Yom truah. So however long the truah has to be, the tekiah has to match that. Now it can be longer. So if your minimal trua has to be, let's say, 3 seconds, that's what we say for a shvarim trua, 3 seconds. So therefore, your tekiah has to be 3 seconds. If your tekiah is 5 seconds, that's fine. And if your shvarim trua takes 10, that's fine, as long as they all meet the minimum. Okay. But we only got to 9 sounds. How do we get to 30 sounds? And 9 isn't divisible into 30, so it's a little bit of a problem. And for that, we go to the Gemara, which means, by the way, what we just read is the din of the Mishnah. In the din of the Mishnah, meaning in Tannaitic times, what they did was exactly what you read, 9 sounds. That was it. And the Mishnah talks about if you hear 9 sounds over the course of 9 hours, you yotzei, etc. Right? 9 sounds is what they talk about. How do we get to 30? Because 30 is the baseline halakha of the Gemara. How do we get there? So here you have the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and I put it in English also, so you could follow it more easily. Atkin Rabbi Avahu beKesari. Now Rabbi Avahu was a very big rabbi in Caesarea, very popular rabbi. He was a student of Rabbi Yochanan, so put him in the middle of towards the end of the 3rd century, and he was very welcome at the prefect's house in Caesarea. And when he would come, all of the people who worked there said, "Oh, the grand rabbi of the Jews has come." He's a very popular man, highly esteemed. So Atkin, when he made a takana, it carried weight. Rabbi Aval b'Kesari, tkia shlosha tvar shvarim trua tkia. He made a takana, which is tkia, 3 shvarim. Now trua, now we're going to use trua the way we use it, which is atatatatatatatatatam, tkia. Now, we challenge that. We say, manavshah, pick a sound and stick with it. If the proper sound of a trua is staccato, then do that. The genucha gonach, if on the other hand it's like a siren or like a sighing, do that. So the answer they give is a very bizarre answer. Let me ask you a question. What hand do you put tefillin on, Jason?
Weaker hand.
Weaker hand. How do you know that?
Because my father taught me.
Father did it. How'd your father know? Because his father did it.
Right.
God forbid we would ever end up with a generation or two of nobody putting on tefillin, then we'd have to start looking in books. And we'd have to consult people who have ancient secret knowledge. But thank God we don't. Right? I could ask you, what did the 2 weeks before Pesach look like in any Jewish home? A nut house. I know because it was a nut house growing up. My parents grew up in a nut house. We all grew up in a nut house. Erev Pesach, right? Until people started going away. It was a different kind of nut house, right? So I understand Rabbi Avahu suddenly doesn't know what a trua sounds like. Suddenly nobody knows what a trua sounds like. He said, I'm not sure what to do. So here, watch this. He was unsure if it was a sighing, the wailing sound or the sighing sound. Very bizarre. Right, so now Matki for Avira. Avira said, "Vidilma yulule havi." Maybe the real sound is the ululating sound, the staccato. Kamafsik shlosha shvarim ben trua l'tkia. I want you a picture. You let's say you did a tkia and then you played when the saints go marching in on your shofar, and you did a trua and a tkia. Would you be yotze? You wouldn't. Why not? What's wrong with that?
An extra non-prescribed sound.
Right, you interrupted between the tkia and the trua. Okay, so if the real sound is a trua, then your shvarim are interruption. So the answer he gives is the hadar avi tkia trua tkia. So after doing this thing, you do tkia trua tkia. By Ravina, dilma genuche avi. Maybe the real sound is the sighing sound. Kamifsega trua ben shvarim tkia. Then if you drove tkia shvarim trua tkia and that trua is wrong, you've interrupted it again with an irrelevant sound. Ravi tkia shvarim tkia. So the answer is you do tkia shvarim tkia. In other words, what are you doing? You're doing tkia shvarim tkia, tkia trua tkia, which by the way means I'm in doubt, which by the way is weird. And now I'm covering my doubt by doing both ways, which should give me 18 sounds, not 30. It should be 18 sounds. Aval mayatkin. So what did Rabbi Avahu add? Igenucha ganacha avde, yulu yulala avde. If all his takana was do it both ways because we're not sure, then what's the point? Well, what's he adding? And why did he make a takana of tkiya shvarim tkiya trua tkiya? The answer is Mesafkele Dimagonach Fialo. His new safek that he raised was maybe the real sound is both. Sighing, then weeping. Sighing, then ululating. Yachli Avinami Ipcha. So why don't you do the opposite then? Tkiya, Trua Shvarim Tkiya. The answer is Stama Demiltike, Mitravenish Milta, Beresha Ganachvada Yalo. Because normally, when people hear upsetting news, the first thing they do is sigh, and then it breaks into, I mean, I don't know if that's true, but okay, that's what they say. All right. We are left with quite a confusing thing. Rebbe Avahu, by the way, we now understand where we got 30 from. Because if we're going to count Shroim and Trua as two different sounds, it's Tkia, Shroim, Trua, Tkia. That's 4 times 3 is 12, plus 9 is 30. But why? Why? And why are, where's the doubt here? It's very strange. So let me introduce you to a friend of ours. His friend, his name is Zrachia Halevi. He was originally from a Spanish family that moved to Provence. He lived in Narbonne in Provence, middle of the 12th century, wrote an important critique on the Rif, had an ongoing battle with the Ravid. And in his commentary on the Rif, he does the following. And I'll summarize it because it's late. He summarizes, he quotes a tshuva of Rav Haigon, who says that really what happened was they had a tradition that any broken sound is a valid trua, right? And there were some places where they did it like this and some places where they did it like that. And what did Rabbi Avahu actually come to do? So let me ask you a question. What is achdut? What's unity? How do you achieve unity? So as much as unity is a great thing with a wave on a flag, you know what most people's version of unity is? I want everyone to do it my way. That's unity. Rabbi Avahu said, we want unity on Rosh Hashanah. You know what we're going to do? We're going to do it always. In other words, there were communities that did a trua, communities did a shvarim, some communities did shvarim trua. Rabbi Avahu said, everybody does all of them. So that we should all be one nation. And he then comments an interesting thing. He says, because here's the concern that Rabbi Avahu had. Now, I'm just going to take 1 second aside to get on a little bit of a Zoom soapbox. I have friends who work in trying to arrange seating and locations for people on Rosh Yom Kippur. You're all familiar with this phenomenon. And with people going bonkers over where they're seated and getting very upset and angry, and sometimes angry to the point of vilification of Nebuch, the poor guy who's volunteered his time to try to set up seating in the shul. And you got to stop and wonder. Rosh Hashanah, you're coming before God and asking him for a good year. You're asking him to forgive you. You're asking him to see you in his good graces. And you're going crazy on a guy because of where he put your seat. Rosh Hashanah is a great time for achdut. It's a terrible time for fighting. So watch Rabbi Haigon here. He's quoted in this passage from Zrachia Levi. Says following. He said, the scholars understand that all the sounds are good. We do it this way, you do it that way, it's all fine. And if I come to your community, I'll do it your way, and that's all good. But what will the common folk think? After a generation or two, the common folk are going to think, we do it the right way, and you guys are wrong. I remember once meeting a guy who grew up here in the Orthodox community. And as a kid, he went to visit a friend on Pesach to have a meal at his house, and the friend was Sephardi. He didn't eat anything. He came home, and he was convinced that these people aren't Jewish because they had rites on the table. Right? You do things differently than me. You must be wrong. You must be out. I didn't think they were Jewish, but they weren't reserved. He said, that's what's going to happen is the head yotok, the simple people are going to think, oh, we make the right sound. You guys are wrong. And we'll lead the fighting. Lead a machloket. So what did Rabbi Avahu do? He said, I'm making a takana. And because he was Rabbi Avahu, it held the day. Held the day. And by the way, it is to this day the practice of Jews everywhere to do all the sounds. Ultimate achdut. Ultimate achdut isn't we all do it my way or we carve a little out of this. We all do everybody's way. It takes a little longer. It's worth it. And that's the explanation here. He said, so there was no doubt. Rabbi Avahu didn't have a doubt. Come on. He didn't have a doubt whatsoever. You know what the issue was? There was simply different minhagim, and Rabbi Avahu, ba lahashvot haminhagot, to equate and equalize all of the minhagim. And that's the sugya of how the simple word trua ends up with a shofar, with a kiyah, lefanel, leachareha, with three different kinds of truot, and each one of them done three times, leading to 30 sounds. So, Mirat Hashem, next week we'll have one last shiur on shofar. We're going to look at the brachan shofar, where it comes from, and we'll go from there. In the meantime,
yes.